Enterprise technology markets are hyper-competitive. It is becoming ever more challenging to break out above the noise. Today, we are going to do something different. We are going to look outside of the technology industry for lessons on how to establish a new business when there are so many existing alternatives. I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today, I will be joined by Matt Kelso, the CEO of Sagebrush Coffee. We will be exploring what it takes to establish a new business that is competing against well-established incumbents. So let's get the insight engine running. Matt, welcome. We don't know each other. We just met here today, but I have been a longtime customer of your company, Sagebrush, and I'm not even sure, to be honest with you, how I got wired into you guys. I live in Columbus, Ohio. You guys are based in Arizona, so I don't really even know how it happened, but probably because I am a coffee snob is what led me to your door, and I'm sure it has something to do with it. But I'm going to open with an easy one. Just tell me how long Sagebrush has been in business.
Yeah, so I started the business out of my garage in 2012. So.
Okay.
I roasted coffee personally as a hobby, and in 2012 kind of said, hey, I wonder if I can sell this. Started out of the garage. I don't even think we were big enough to do in the garage. I think we were doing it on the stovetop in 2012. And it was kind of a proof of concept, and it worked. And then we ended up deciding to move. So like July of 2013, we built out the garage in the new house. Set everything up, built a new website, and said, okay, let's really go after this. But our official start date is November of 2012.
So you already have a lot in common with Silicon Valley, because you know all these Silicon Valley companies start in garages, right? Like, you know, Hewlett Packard, et cetera. So like you're already like right in the
That's about where the commonalities stop.
Okay. Well, no, we're gonna find out. I'm gonna keep pushing on this. I disagree. So, and what I think is really interesting is I stumbled on a video of you talking about the, you know, your background, and you were an industrial engineer by training. So yeah. What inspired you to actually go into the business? You're starting in your garage, et cetera, but what drew you to go from, hey, I'm going to take this from a hobby in my garage and actually go fully into this? What attracted you to the industry?
So coffee roasting itself is super analytical. Like mm-hmm. They talk about it as the science and art of coffee roasting. And the art is you use all five senses, where you're smelling the roast as it's going, you're tasting the coffee, you're experiencing it with all five senses. And so there's an art to it. But the science behind it is what drew me into roasting itself. Mm-hmm. And my wife describes coffee roasting at home similar to like making homemade chocolate chip cookies. Like mm-hmm. You can buy Chips Ahoy, but anything you make at home is going to be better. And so mm-hmm. Home coffee roasting is kind of very similar to that.
Interesting.
But when you get really nerdy into it, you can make some crazy roasting curves. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what drew me into coffee roasting.
Yeah.
And the entrepreneurship side of things, of going and starting a business, I just kind of have always been built that way. Like, you know, I had a paper route at 12. I stole stuff on eBay back when I was an industrial engineer at Intel and selling on mm-hmm. eBay on the side, not making any money, but just loved the idea of generating something that was entrepreneurial. And so once again, my wife says, you only have someone say this is the best cup of coffee they've ever had in their life so many times before you think we should sell this.
And yeah, so, interesting. Yeah.
And, you know, at that point, it was 18 years of marriage. I'd brought to her many times like, hey, I want to go start this business. And mm-hmm. when I said, hey, I want to start selling coffee online, her answer was, if you're going to do it well. And so we kind of sat down and put together a business plan and went after it.
So what I hear is two things there. A passion around roasting itself, but then combined with a real intellectual interest in starting businesses in general, intellectual entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. That's something that was part of your DNA, if you will. And, you know, it's interesting. The main reason I wanted to bring you on Tectonic and the angle that I thought would be interesting for the audience is that, you know, there's this business framework that there was a book several years ago. I don't know how many people out there still know it, but it was called Blue Ocean Strategy. And the concept there is that, you know, most markets, doesn't matter what you sell for a living, all of our, you know, members eventually end up in very competitive markets. There's alternatives, yep. You know, it becomes hyper competitive, and that's called a red ocean. And then the concept is, how do you, you know, think and create a new market opportunity, what's called a blue ocean? Now, the coffee industry is notoriously competitive, right? There's tons of alternatives. all up the spectrum. And so what did you think you could do to go into a hyper-competitive, you know, red ocean market and somehow carve out a blue ocean? What was your thinking on the value proposition there?
So it goes back to the chocolate chip cookie analogy. I have industrial engineering, which is a broad brush. Spent a lot of time in logistics. Most of my time at Intel was in the logistics organization, and then just took logistics to other companies in my career. And so I was thinking, if there's a way for me to get fresh coffee in people's hands, that's the goal. And if I can get that homemade chocolate chip cookie feel to people's hand. And so that's why we built the roast on demand model, where we don't roast it until you order it. We roast everything on very small batch roasters, which is very counter to the whole rest of the industry. And I was really going after that. And my original goal was fresh roasted coffee at the same price point as what like a Starbucks or your general coffee company is. And so I was looking for coffees that I could pull that off on. And frankly, it didn't do that well. Like we did not, like the first month or two, it was really hard to find anyone that wanted to give it a try.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
And so I sampled a coffee. I'm pretty sure it was a Kenyan coffee that at the time my cost was $7 a pound, which this was when green coffee was, I mean, now almost everything not that good is seven, but at the time, $7 a pound was really, really high. Mm-hmm. And I sampled it. I was like, man, this coffee is amazing, but I can't sell it at the price points I'm trying to. And so what I honestly did was double my margin, like said, hey, I'm going to sell this for twice as much profit, because if it doesn't sell, I don't want to eat all the cost of the beans. Call it a gold label coffee, launch it. And I literally launched it, which may still be on our website, with a blog that said, don't buy this coffee because I want to drink it. And I sent an email out to what we had as a customer list at that time, and we sold out in an hour. And I was like, oh, this is my business. Like, these are my customers. I need to go find the best coffees out there and go after that. It's not just fresh roasted. So we built the whole model around fresh roasted, but really it was, no, I need to stand out by having coffees people just haven't tried in America before. Yep. And so that's what we started going after.
So you put several, I think, really interesting business lessons on the table here that I want to play back. And the first one is around how do you create the blue ocean? The attribute that you went after there was fresh roasting, which, by the way, I know when I did stumble on you guys, that's what connected me. And I said, I don't know where else I could get this. I can order coffee. They're going to not roast it till I order it. It's going to show up a couple of days later. I know it has been sitting on a shelf roasted, you know, months ago. And that does make a big difference, right? And so that's the first lesson, is what are the attributes that, you know, this is all the way back to the days of Salesforce when they said, look, we're going to sell software, but you don't have to buy it in the cloud. That's how they created a blue ocean in a hyper-competitive CRM market. You're doing the same thing here, anchoring on an attribute that you know matters. You know that this makes a difference to people. And the second thing you put on the table is this issue of price. And this is an age-old lesson in business. You know, it's always the race to the bottom on price. You know, to be competitive, I got to be competitive. How much are people going to spend on a cup of coffee? How many people are willing to spend on a bag of coffee? And you separated yourself, to, as you said, to find your audience by sending a signal to say, look, this is a premium product. This is going to be worth it. We're doing something nobody else is doing. And it's not going to be cheap. But, you know, if that's something you care about, then we're your vendor. And I think that that creates this massive separation. And so I think price is always an important signal in terms of who you're trying to reach.
100%.
You know, what message you're trying to signal about your product. And so, but, and so let's talk about, so you went on that attribute. You sent a huge market signal with pricing. Then how did you actually go find your peeps? How did you, you know, reach your target audience? What did you do there?
Yes, that a little bit of luck and timing. I started as an online coffee roaster, and I have not found anyone in the industry that did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like everyone I talk to, the model within coffee is you open a coffee shop, you get some revenue stream, then you can save up and buy a $100,000 roaster, and then you start roasting your coffee and you go down that path. Mm-hmm. And I started the other way around. Now, I didn't buy a $100,000 roaster to start. I bought a $1,000 roaster to start, but I started the other way around. And in 2012, 2013, there just weren't a lot of coffee shops and coffee businesses online at all. And so really, we were able to carve out a market for that. And so to get people to come, it kind of tied to, well, when we started the business, I was like, okay, I don't know anything about coffee. Like, I know I love it. I've learned how to roast it. I mean, I literally, which I think this is in our profile, and this isn't an exaggeration, like when I was a kid, I would sneak into the pantry and steal coffee beans and eat coffee beans like candy. So I have had a problem since I was like six.
Well, at least you acknowledge it. You know, you're able to, that's part of the healing journey, right? And, you have to admit you have a problem.
I had a paper route at 12 and didn't save a nickel because I bought lattes with it.
it's hilarious.
I mean, I've been into coffee since forever, but I didn't really understand the industry. So I just bought every book that existed and started reading them. And then writing blog posts. And in the, 10, 12 years ago, the blogs were huge. And so I would write a blog post. I remember, like, I would sit at the kitchen table and write a blog post and then put together the lineups for my kids' soccer team that I was coaching. And that was like my Saturday was write the blog, send an email, build the lineup, go coach soccer. Like that was like Saturdays. And it just became consistent. And another thing that I learned from a green company, like a green coffee company in the industry called Sweet Maria's. Tom at Sweet Maria's had a great archive that like taught people how to roast. And I would talk all the time about how I'm not certain they're the best coffee. I know they're not the best prices, but they taught me how to roast. And therefore I buy from it. And when we were small, I bought from him quite a bit. And I'm like, I have a personal connection with Tom and I've never met the man because of what he did to teach me how to get in the industry. And so I'm like, I want to be that person for people that like specialty coffee. And so that's why we started the blog. That's why we started the emails. And we send two or three emails a week to this day. My sister was is employee one. Like she was the first one to take pay before I took pay. Still works for us and does all of our writing and all of our email marketing still. And so that just was a focus point to try to connect that personal relationship. I also just put our family out there. Like when things go on in our family, I email about that. Anything I can create, because online is so just anonymous. And it's like anything I can do to create a personal connection, I want to do that. And coffee is really personal. So it's different than just buying a laptop. Like there's something personal. All of us, when we enjoy coffee, like I woke up the other day, had a sip of coffee and I'm like, I really love coffee. My wife's like, yeah, no kidding. I'm like, no, but this is like, it's like, there's something really personal about it. And so that's one of the reasons I like the industry too.
Well, I want to play a little bit of that back. And again, I am a consumer of your product, so I can speak to this personally. But you know, what you opened up with, when I asked, how are you reaching an audience? You went to a channel that was relatively untapped for your industry. So there's a lesson there, right? So for anybody who's like, are there channels to reach customers that are being underutilized? So the internet in general was being underutilized in this hyper-competitive industry. So you said, hey, we're going to make that an effective channel. But the second thing you put on the table is, like you said, email, websites, et cetera, can be incredibly impersonal experiences. And what you did is you worked hard to make it personal. And I know this personally, because when I go, if I go to your website and I'm looking through coffees and you guys put a new coffee on I've never seen before, you click on it and you don't just say, here's how much it is and here's a flavor profile. There's always a little story about how you found the producer. There's usually a picture of somebody from the farm that you met. I mean, it's a very personal thing. And so, I got to tell you, I never really thought about this consciously, but subconsciously, it's super effective because, again, if what attracted me was your blue ocean attribute, which is fresh roasted, okay, that gets me in the door. Now I'm in the door, and now you're layering on that things where I feel like when I click that button, this is personal now. Like I actually know, I went part of your journey to go find that coffee. I'm actually seeing a picture of the person from the farm that's growing it. I mean, I feel connected to that bag of coffee in a way that I'm never going to feel walking down the grocery store aisle and saying, oh, I think I'll grab a bag of that. So those are all really interesting things that, again, I think even a B2B audience can learn from, because those are tactics that are going to work in a positive way, right? No matter what you're what you're selling. And so, you keep them engaged through your ongoing blog. Let's talk a little bit about the technology side of it, right? Because this is technology. Yeah. This is we have this big technology. So how have you leveraged technology in your business, in terms of either roasting or customer engagement or overall operations? How do you think about that? And again, you're an industrial engineer by design.
Yeah. So I just feel like I've been really blessed in my career to learn a lot of different technologies. And so, like I said, I started as an industrial engineer, worked at Intel for 10 years. Then I moved over to a retail appliance chain and as an industrial engineer there and expanded my career. And by the time I left, I was the marketing and IT director. And so I learned a lot of tools within the industry and, mm-hmm. and that set the table for me to, and when you talk about competitive advantages, like there's the blue ocean, red ocean. It's like, how can I distinguish myself to the customers? But there's mm-hmm. also like, what do I have in my tool belt that gives me a competitive advantage in a really tough market? And I remember mm-hmm. probably in the first 2 or 3 years, I was going over some of my sales numbers and just some analyses on pricing with one of the buyers that I was working with to buy coffee. And I just kind of shared my spreadsheet. And Jeff looks at the spreadsheet and he's like, you're doing the wrong thing, Matt. You need to stop selling coffee and you need to go consult with coffee businesses because what you have here, no one does.
And oh, really interesting.
And what your analysis on the back end just separates you in terms of your ability to forecast, which I mean, I ran an analytics team. I ran a forecasting team. Like I just had all these things that I've done. And so
these skills, yeah.
I don't want to live in spreadsheets, but when I have a question, I mean, I used to train, like, what do we call it? We called it like Excel for analysts. We would train throughout Intel how to use Excel quickly mm-hmm. to make quick decisions. So I use software that collects as much data as possible and then dump it into a spreadsheet and go make decisions as fast as I can. And so that's really helped me. That set me apart. Also, I mean, I'm a terrible programmer, but I know enough to know how to do simple things. And so like our roaster came in, which this is a funny anecdote, but I was in Guatemala in 22 and I was telling this story. But when we got our roaster, that was the first like production scale roaster. It came in and it had a default roast profile and it was terrible. And I couldn't get a good cup of coffee out of it. And I was fiddling mm-hmm. with the profile and fiddling with the software and went through pounds and pounds and pounds of coffee and was like, I don't know if I can scale this business because I can't get a good roast profile out of a bigger roaster. And so I sat down and wrote a new software program that adjusted the way the roast profile managed over time, went through a couple of books that I read on roasting, tweaked the profile, and finally was able to get a good cup of coffee. So I'm telling this story in Guatemala, and the guy that's hosting me in Guatemala was like, you know, my first job in coffee? I'm like, no. He's like, I worked for that company and wrote that original roast profile that you said was terrible. I'm like, are you kidding? No. Like, oh my what gosh. Are the odds?
Yeah. Oh my God.
But that really, like, and he's like, no, it was probably bad. It was my first job in coffee. Like, I didn't know what I was doing, but still, it just felt, I literally insulted a guy to his face as he's hosting me in country. But
I think what's important there, and again, so our audience is providing technology, you know, to enterprise customers. And, you know, one of the big themes that exists in the world today, and that we believe deeply at TSIA, is every business, I don't care what you're doing for a living, is becoming more data and technology driven, full stop. And what you just articulated there is the fact that here you are in an industry where a vast majority of the coffee shop owners or the people in the industry, especially at your scale, right? So we're not talking about some massive company, but at your scale, are not data driven, analytics driven. They're not. They're probably not as technology savvy as you are. Like you're talking about the ability to put, you know, programming behind things. So those skills do really separate business models, because if you're able to apply data, analytics, and technology to your operations, you're going to be much more efficient and effective than the person down the road. So in the long term, I mean, that really is going to separate winners and losers, because you're going to be able to deliver a quality product at a lower cost footprint than anybody who says, look, I think I want to go after that same space. Well, they're not only going to have to match you on the attribute of fresh roasting, on the quality of the coffee, but now they're going to have to match you operationally. It's going to be tough to, you know, to do all three.
We have a regular customer in our coffee shop who's been a barista for 3 of our local competitors, like people within 5 miles of our shop in the specialty industry. And he was talking to Jonathan, my son, who's the GM of our shop. And he's like, yeah, the more I interact with coffee shop businesses, the more I realize no one really knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan was like, I haven't felt that at all here, that we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I do think a lot of that has to do with the technology we use on the backbone. And we make decisions that says, hey, you know, right now we're an online business with 3 separate online websites. We have 3 different channels that we push online and a single location coffee shop. we want to scale. And so we want to have several locations. We want to be kind of the coffee shop in the Phoenix metro area. And so we make decisions and build out products and build out, like, we do things that take more time now, knowing, hey, when we have a second shop, this is the process that's going to work for that shop. And,
yeah,
and we don't want to get used to processes that don't scale. And we don't want to get used to software that doesn't scale. And so there's a lot of intentionality and probably time. Like, if I were an outside consultant and looked at my P&L, I would be like, well, you're spending too much on technology. You need to scale that back. You don't need it. And and I firmly believe without it, we wouldn't be profitable.
So everything you're saying right now is music to the ears of our audience, because again, this is what they're doing. It's not a technology, but it is. It's a great, you know, sort of proof point for any business. Again, I don't care what you're doing, even something like, hey, I got a coffee shop. People are like, well, you know, how much does that involve with technology? It could be the difference between long-term success and again, operational differentiation versus not. So I think it's a great affirmation.
A great example. So at some point, relatively early on, we were really struggling with inventory tracking, and and that's another passion of mine. And so I went out to find a software solution that would solve our problem. And the problem was, like I said, we have multiple online websites. And so we sell, you know, 4-pound bags, 16-ounce bags, 12-ounce bags of roasted coffee. Then we sell unroasted coffee to like home coffee roasters, and those are in multiple bag sizes. And then we sell drinks, which pulls from the same stock. So if I buy 60-kilogram bag of coffee and I roast it, it loses 15% of its weight during the roast process because it loses the water. And then I take that and sell it in multiple variations. And now I've got to track my inventory all the way through. And so finding an inventory solution that takes a raw material and builds basically a recipe of what am I going to pull from this for the finished good and tracks that all the way back was actually not easy to find. At least 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't easy to find. And when I found someone that wasn't like SAP or out of my price range type of business, but found someone that scaled to small businesses, they were a very young company. And we worked with them to build the solutions we needed to be able to make it so what it is. And now, like, we're just connected to that software completely. And it's so valuable for us now because our inventory is just never wrong. We're never overselling. We know how to build it. So,
well, that's a great example of, again, how companies of all sizes can really partner strategically with a technology vendor, you know, to change to change your business, right? And I think every technology vendor out there, that's the role they inspire to play with their customers, is that they partner and they give you solutions that really are going to make, you know, a big difference in your business. So I think it's another great affirmation there. Since I have you on, I do have to indulge myself and I want to get a little bit nerdy on coffee.
All right.
I got a couple questions around that. And one of them is, you know, I do want to talk about your approach to sourcing your coffee beans, because when we were talking right before the podcast here about, again, how that world is getting tough, you know, with the supply of coffee beans and for a lot of different factors, but how do you go about finding, because again, you go to some pretty boutique coffee farms. So how do you figure out who these people are?
So now we're going to talk about my real passion.
Wait, it's not spreadsheets and software? I can't believe that.
I mean, yeah, I'd still be at Intel if it was spreadsheets.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Good point.
Well, maybe not this year, but you know. So my son has been in design his whole, like, been involved in design his whole life. He made our first logo in 2012, which he was 11 when he did it. Mm-hmm. And he's just kind of fallen in love with the business. And at one point, he was pushing me to make a mission statement. And me being in corporate world, I'm like tired of mission statements. Let's just go do work. Like, we don't need to sit here and make another mission statement. Let's go do work. And he's like, well, just tell me what the goal of the business is so we know what we're going for. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, ultimately, I feel like every coffee roaster wants to put themselves on display. And the reality is all the work comes from the producers, the farmers. Like, they're usually third generation coffee families that have been doing this their whole lives, that dedicate hours and hours and hours a day. And then we roast it for 15 minutes and get all the glory. Like, so my goal is to not do that. And so Jonathan wrote on the whiteboard, so we're putting on display the hard work of coffee producers. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. And that has been so helpful to remember when we think about sourcing, sustainability, everything. We want to get back to the producers as much as possible and get out of the way. When we build a roast profile, our goal is to put on display the hard work of the producers in our coffee. We don't want our roast profile to stand out. We want the coffee to stand out. And that comes in everything. And so Sagebrush was actually a side business for me. I had a full-time job up until, honestly, COVID. Like, it was 5 years ago, pretty close to this week. I mean, April 1st was my last day, but I was transitioning out over Q1 of 2020. And one of the main reasons I wanted to kind of focus on Sagebrush full-time was so that we could get ourselves to origin and start understanding what's going on with the producers and how we can help at that level. And I have a small niche in a huge market, so I don't want to fool myself into thinking, oh man, I'm making all the difference. But the education side, I hope does. And we invest a lot of money in educating people on coffee, which, like I said at the beginning, like, that's to create a connection, and it's all marketing. At the end of the day, I have a family to feed. But really, I'm hoping that we can help people see what really goes into their cup of coffee every day. And as we speak this week, planning our origin trips for Q1, which it's coffee season, like most of South America is in harvest season and early harvest from basically the beginning of February through mid-March. And so actually, just before I logged into the call, I was talking to one of our up and coming managers about a trip he and I are taking to Costa Rica. And I'm like, from basically February 17th to March 16th, I think I'm home 5 days. Because we're just going to South America and Central America, interacting with the producers. And there's a piece of it that is like, hey, we want to go there. We want to find good coffee. But really, it is such an encouragement to them when you walk in the door and say, hey, thank you for what you guys do.
I'm just curious, you know, because again, you guys do a fantastic job of promoting these producers on your website, telling their story. Are you building a reputation so that when you show up, they know that they're...
It was crazy. Like, actually, Jonathan and I went to Colombia like in October, maybe November, like a few months ago. And we show up and we get to like a cupping room where we're waiting to sample some coffees. And there's a gal there who's famous in Colombia because she produces, like, her family produces some really good coffees. And she took a 6-hour bus drive to meet us. And then we cupped her coffees, which were like 30 different coffees that she had. And in 2022, I was in Colombia judging Best Cup, which is a national, like, I think 5,000 different coffee producers submit coffee samples. By the time the American judges get there, there's like 90 samples that we cup. And then we ranked them best. And then they went to auction. And then we bid on the auction. And so the fact that a Best Cup judge was coming to sample her coffees, and then we spent the night, like 4 or 5 hours, sampling coffees, talking about every single one, talking about what I liked and disliked about it. And at the end, she was just almost in tears, like grateful for the time that I took. I turned to Jonathan, I'm like, it's weird to feel famous. And then she took a 6-hour bus ride back because she had a wedding the next day. And so she like drove just to spend a few hours with us so we could give feedback. And that was consistent the whole week we were there. Like, we went to a coffee farm, and a kid who was in his early 20s, he was fourth generation coffee farmer. He actually was, I want to say, an accountant in Bogota, and then decided he wanted to go into the family business and got really excited about high quality coffee and was practicing cupping every single day so that he would know his coffee was high quality. And then he was so proud to just make us a Chemex of his coffee when we walked in and we talked about it. And it was just like that relationship of them saying, hey, we know, you know, they know I could pick from thousands and thousands of coffees, but the fact that I come to them, want to interact with them, and want to give them coffee just means the world. And so I love that part. Like, it's, I'm not sure that there is a direct financial like ROI to the origin visits, but there is in my personal passion and love for the business. And I think that's why Grant, the manager I was talking to, like, I want every single one of our shop managers to have been to Origin multiple times. I want as many of our employees to go to Origin, because you just get a connection to the industry in ways you can't any other. There's no other way.
And I think in terms of ROI, you know, so there's hard ROIs and there's soft ROIs in business. Yeah. And I think the soft ones often get lost, right?
But, absolutely.
But, you know, I'm going to play this all the way back, right? So here's your company that the mission is, we're going to shine a bright light on these suppliers. And that's core to who we are. So visiting, going to these suppliers directly is aligned with the mission. And I think the other, to me, the important lesson here is and people forget this in business as well, is that reputation really does matter. And what you're articulating is that you have this mission, you're living up to this mission, you're building the reputation as a company that really does care about the suppliers. And it's the classic, they tell two friends and they tell two friends. So when you show up, like you say, you know, you kind of have this rock star status, but it's well earned, and you have this valid reputation that, hey, we're here to shine a bright light on what you're doing, and it is appreciated. And it continues, and that builds on itself, right? Because you're going to find more and more fantastic suppliers because they're going to want to do business with somebody who has that reputation. So I think, you know, it's a killer story.
That's what's really, I mean, that's what's helped us in the last few years is these relationships. So backing up, when COVID hit and everyone, like the coffee shops closed and we were growing, we were able to help out suppliers who were losing commitments on coffee because the way coffee kind of works, I mean, there's different buying models, but in our industry, you basically reserve coffee based on a pre-crop sample. So the coffee that I go and cup in February, March and pick, those are like the first, like cherries don't all ripen on the tree at the same time. And so they pick the first kind of round of ripes and then sample those and say, okay, this is what we think this crop's going to taste like. And we reserve coffee based on that. And we won't see that coffee till August, September, maybe even next year, because there's a 4 or 5 month processing process that we're at. And so anyway, we reserve that. Well, if I reserve based on forecasts, if I don't meet those forecasts, then I've committed to buying coffee that I can't actually buy. And so what I was able to do was build relationships really early on and buy coffee other people were losing their commitments on. And that created goodwill with coffee exporters and farmers that has now turned into, we buy from a coffee farm in Panama. And I'm not exaggerating. Like, they send us their pre-crop samples, we make our commitment, and then they go and pick what they're going to send to auction. And we have bought a coffee for $200 a pound, which is crazy to me that I'm buying $200 a pound green beans. And then they have, we haven't bought all of it, they've turned around, taken that to auction, it sold for $5,000 a kg.
Oh, wow.
And so because we were their first customer in the US, we helped them figure things out. We built a relationship. And actually, our family vacation this year is over our kids' spring break. And we're going to Panama and going to that farm because I've never actually visited. Like I've interacted with them at shows and stuff, but I've never been to that farm. And so we're going there. Like that's a family vacation in the Kelso home.
That's fantastic. So again, I mean, reputation and goodwill mean a lot in business. And again, it's not often a hard ROI you can look at, but the soft ROI can be massive. And you just can't look past those things, you know, when you're building the business. You know, I'm going to ask you one final question. I'm keeping an eye on the clock here around you're in a tough business. And the question I'd ask you to round this out is if someone is listening to this and they're thinking about starting a new business, but it is in a mature industry. And I don't care if it's a technology business. I don't care if it's a new passion like you have that they want to turn into a business, but you know, it's not greenfield, right? It's competitive. What's the one piece of advice you would give them if they were thinking about doing that?
Okay. So when I started, before I started the business, I Googled how many coffee drinkers are in America. And the answer was 100 million. And so then I did some quick math and said, if I can make $5 a bag profit, I only need to find 400 weekly customers to make $100,000 a year profit. And just quick math, 400. I'm like, 400 out of 100 million is a pretty small number. And actually, when I was 12, I had a paper route with 400 papers. And so I'm like, that was my neighborhood growing up. Like I could bike to that growing up. Like that's not a big number. And that was what gave me the confidence to go after it because it's like, I don't need to own the total available market.
Yeah,
I just need to find a small niche. Now that the numbers ended up not working out that way. Like everyone doesn't buy coffee weekly. Like math was enough to give me the confidence to go after it and not be intimidated by the size of the market and the number of coffee shops. And now, I mean, I pass 7 coffee shops on my way to mine every day.
Yeah.
And I don't live that far from work, but on every corner.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, if I play that back, it's almost like you started by saying, how big is the TAM? I mean, is there a viable market here? The answer obviously was yes. And what is the amount of that TAM that I would have to carve out to have a business that I would define successful? Do I think that's achievable? If the answer is yes to that, then the third step is what we actually opened up with is, okay, if I'm going to carve that part of the market out, how am I going to differentiate and do that? What's going to be different about my business compared to, you know, those seven coffee shops that you drive by. So I think that that three-step process is not a bad way to at least start, you know, because if you can answer yes to all three of those questions, then you can continue pursuing the idea. If it's no, like, hey, the market's not big enough, or I don't have confidence I can get the size, or I don't have a differentiator, then maybe you want to go back to the drawing board.
And for me, like when I started, fresh roasted coffee was not very common. Nowadays, it's kind of a normal thing. I mean, I don't know that the roast on demand model is normal, but it's really like getting your hands on coffee that is less than a week old, having coffee with the roast date on it. It's pretty normalized. And so I don't want to be so tied to what I think is my competitive advantage when I started the business that I can't pivot and grow to say, okay, where is my real niche? I mean, when I started the business, producers weren't on my radar. I hadn't thought about that part of the business. And as I became educated in the industry, I was able to specialize more and more and really carve out where do we fit in this world. And so that's the other piece of advice, is just be willing to pivot. Don't give up, you know, the gold label, don't buy my coffee analogy of like, hey, the business wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And when I found customers, it was like I doubled down on what I knew I could go market to.
Yeah. And you just ended with a killer nugget there for everybody. And that is, again, if you set up your blue ocean based on a certain attribute that is working, at some point that may not be the winning attribute because people catch up to it. And you have to be okay with that and say, look, I have to be sensitive on when it's time to pivot to a different differentiator. And that is such a salient message to our audience, because there are so many technology companies who do come out of the gate with some killer differentiator, whether it's a technical capability or whatever it is, right? They've got something, again, just like Salesforce when they were new SaaS company, you know, SaaS is a thing. And it's a, there's, you know, you got a lot of SaaS options now in CRM or whatever. Yeah. You can't be hanging your head on that forever.
Now, can I just get something on floppy disks that doesn't
exactly. But that's, a really important business lesson, is you have to be comfortable pivoting off of something that maybe has served you incredibly well to date, but it, you know, it might not serve you forever. So I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's, you know, you've put, you know, I think a lot of interesting things on the table, and I learned, you know, some more things about coffee, which I always find super fascinating. So your passion is obvious there. And I always like to end these podcasts with a question of the day. So what I'm going to ask the audience here is, how is your company differentiating in an ever more crowded marketplace? Cheers, everybody.